Welcome to Waiting For You, the podcast where we talk infertility, hope, loss and courage. I'm Janine, mum of one, a newborn and family photographer and lover of dark chocolate. Here we will share stories of families who have faced a different or difficult journey through conception, pregnancy or postpartum. I want to honour these stories and have them be heard, and I want to bring it all, the tears, the hope, the despair and the joy. Hi, and welcome to today's episode. Today I am chatting with Robin. She is a mama to two girls after a journey with hyperthyroidism and unexplained infertility. Robin shares her story of IVF and coming to have her two daughters across two different countries in the world, and also a beautiful ceremony they had to farewell their two leftover embryos after they decided not to have any more children. There is so much goodness in this episode for you. Here's Robin's story. Hi, Robin. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you here. Do you want to start, Robin, by telling me a little bit about you and your family?
Yes. My name is Robin Humphreys, and I have a Kiwi husband. You can maybe tell by my voice that I'm not from here, although I do claim it as home now.
Good.
And we have and so his name is Paul, and we have two lovely daughters, Moana and Ruby, who are age 6 and 3. And we live here in Ototahi, Christchurch.
Yeah, nice.
Yes.
I love your daughter's names.
Thank you.
I just love that your first daughter has such a New Zealand Māori name. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to share what you love doing as a family with your little ones?
Sure. Well, they keep us active, of course.
Yeah. Busy?
Absolutely. But we do love spending time tramping, camping, biking a bit, yeah, just being out and about together. We tend to, I think, share our time with pretty evenly between adventuring and also we love being at home together.
Nice.
Yeah, sort of settling. Since we bought a house a few years ago, actually, just before the first lockdown, it's just been great to be settled in a place and especially as a family now. So it's really great.
And just before we go on, where are you from originally?
Thank you. I am originally from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
Which is on the halfway up or down the east coast of the United States.
Yeah. I've not been there. I have been to the west coast, but not the east.
Yes, a bit different and a bit further.
Yeah, that's why.
A whole another 5-hour flight.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. One day I'd like to get over there. So you're going to share with us your story of coming to have your two beautiful children, and which includes a fertility story. So how did you first know you were facing fertility issues? What was happening for you?
Yes, so it all sometimes seems like a bit of a blur because it was a bit of a journey. And so looking back, though, my husband and I decided we would wait till I finished grad school before actually actively trying. And by that time, you know, we had been married maybe 4 years. And about a year or so passed after actively trying and graduating. And so we started being a little bit concerned about that. And then a very odd thing happened. I was running a 5K race and I started feeling just some very concerning symptoms. Never the first one over the finish line, but never the last one either. And I was right there at the very end with a 60-some-odd-year-old woman, which she's wonderfully fit. But I just, I had never been that slow. And so there was some sort of like alert to me that there was something going on, not working in my body. So I went into the doctor soon after that, and they discovered I had a thyroid issue.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, which was a bit of a surprise for me. There had never been any sort of, it just sort of happened, which they say it can. It can just be triggered. It can be in your body and sort of triggered by different things. So
right.
Whatever that was, whether it was a combination of stress or whatever, we started getting help for that, which, yeah, I was diagnosed with, well, I had hyperthyroidism. And so then therefore had a few options for treatment and went through with radioactive iodine treatment, which sounds
wow.
crazy. Willingly swallowing a radioactive pill. So
wow.
very bizarre, but we did that. You know, I think at that point in time we were thinking about the goal, which was to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And to have a family together. And so that was, you know, it just seemed like the next step. We didn't know how many steps were going to be after that, but we were categorized still as unexplained infertility, which was bizarre to me, that even though there was a thyroid issue that could be treated, it was still under that category. But the doctor, of course, said, well, you know, you're trying to get pregnant, but you can't officially get treatment, outside treatment, until my thyroid was balanced. And so
right.
I was told it would take about 6 months. It ended up taking 3 times that long.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, a year and a half.
Were you unwell? Were you unwell with this? I mean, obviously your run suggested that you weren't at your normal health condition.
Right. No, I mean, certainly my hormones are kind of all over the place, but
right.
The treatment was kind of working itself out. And so there were definitely some shifts, I think, in how I was doing. But you know, fairly, yeah, I mean, I was continuing to work and continuing to do
right.
everything else. But it was just that length of time was very hard. Looking back, you know, it's almost like a comedy routine, because I would just go in every month and check my thyroid levels, and it would be the same answer over and over again. And obviously going through that was horrible. One experience of that was obviously your body not doing what you want it to do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, on the pregnancy realm of things, but also, you know, with this thing mm-hmm. that was in the way of us getting to that was mm-hmm. just...
So were you still trying naturally to have a baby at that through that time?
We did off and on. It honestly depended on how we felt mentally, because we were sort of being told, you know, it's going to be pretty hard for you to get pregnant with my thyroid being kind of all out of whack.
Oh, I see. So it does affect fertility.
It does affect fertility. And
okay.
So we weren't actively, but I know we weren't completely avoiding it either.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Wow. So that made the journey so much longer, just waiting for your thyroid to come right.
Yes.
And so after that 18 months of working on the thyroid, what happened?
Sure. So when we got cleared, you know, we could feel like we could confidently try, you know, in all ways, whether that was, you know, just naturally trying, but also getting cleared to get into a fertility doctor. And so that's what we did. We were at that time living just south of Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
Well, we went and had the initial consult, and he recommended we began with some oral treatment, and then went on to IUI.
Okay.
And had 2 cycles of IUI. And we were set to have a third one, and he just said, we really don't think anything's going to change, and so we'll go ahead and go to IVF. And
right.
So we thought, okay, we could have chosen probably to go straight to IVF, but I think it was good to just see if the other less invasive treatments would have been helpful.
Yeah. I did exactly the same.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. 2 cycles of IUI. And then I remember talking to one of the nurses about it, about doing a third. And she just looked at me and said, don't just go to IVF. You know, you need more now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that was a big deal for us to sort of, in that appointment go, okay, here we go.
Here we go. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, you know, we're so focused on the goal that it was like, okay, well, this is what we have to do. And this is what we want to do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so do you want to take us through that first cycle of IVF that you did?
Sure. Thanks. Yep. So, just started that wonderful, medicine, all the different concoction of medicines that we have to take. And it's different, yeah. I think different times and depending on what the doctors find, right?
Yeah, there's a few different protocols out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I honestly don't remember that much about this first cycle.
Mm.
But I do remember the pessaries and everything else that wasn't so wonderful. And had the, like, I was doing all the injections myself. My husband could not stand the sight of a needle. Oh. But he still had to do the trigger shot at the very end. So.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he did really well. He was coached up quite a bit. it was good for, sort of trust building.
Yeah.
And so I just recall the changes and how I was feeling through the cycle. But again, so focused on the end that, you're just doing these things that the rest of your family and your friends are thinking, wow,
yeah,
doing what to hopefully get pregnant. And so, yeah, we just had our, the egg collection and, sample. My husband, gave the sample on the same day and egg collection was interesting. I don't remember again, the number of eggs that we got that day, but,
it's okay.
It went down to only one viable embryo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a bit of a shock, I think.
Mm. It was the thing for me that just floored me the most was that drop off from eggs to embryos to viable embryos kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can start with a decent number and end up like you've said with just one. And I found that quite challenging. Did you find that challenging?
Yeah, I did. I think, I mean, I know they always say, oh, it only takes one, and it's true. However, it's not really helpful to hear.
No.
When you're in the middle of it. And so that was challenging. The numbers can kind of play with your head a bit.
Yeah, they can. Mm. And what was the outcome of that sweet little embryo?
Yes, yeah. So we had that put in fresh. It was a fresh
transfer. Yeah.
And just a few weeks later, a couple weeks later, ended up getting what we've come to call like the hardest day of our lives. I think so at that point so far, it was the hardest day to receive that news that we were not pregnant. And
I get that. It's an IVF cycle and everything leading up to that for you, it's just such a big deal. And then when your one chance doesn't work, it just feels so devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was certainly a moment for us and that we were sort of then having to live with for a little bit.
And so once you'd, kind of come through that, what were your plans after that? Tell me about the next step in your treatment. Mm.
After that, actually in the midst of all that, we were also planning a move had sort of already been underway.
Okay.
For us, a global move had already been in the works. And it was kind of the bookend of our, what ended up being this failed IVF cycle was kind of the bookend of our time in the States.
Okay.
For this time, we've moved back and forth a couple times. We are settling well here in New Zealand, though. And so we basically just took a mental and physical, like took that opportunity of moving here. One, I was trying to discern and decide, how did it feel to live in New Zealand, and could I live here? And of course, I mean that was a. It was a question, but it was easily answered. so it was a wonderful, wonderful place to live. And so we really did literally take a mental and physical break. Now, when we moved to New Zealand, we were based in Blenheim for a couple of years. I was on a 2-year work visa, and I had no idea that because my husband was a Kiwi citizen that we could go on the publicly funded list, waiting list. And I guess because I was really focusing on resting and taking that break, I wasn't researching and looking at things.
Yeah.
You know, and someone said, oh, well, you know, there's a publicly funded waiting list. Oh, okay. And so we didn't do it straight away, but I think for us, it was good to have an intentional break.
Yeah.
And really benefit from that together, and then put our name on the list. And it kind of came to the top quite quickly. And I think things have changed a bit around the point system since then.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because I know waiting lists at the moment are quite long. Mm-hmm. I think people can be waiting a couple of years. I'm not sure on the exact timelines, but
yes.
Yeah, might have just been the time you were there, you were doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was, I guess, you know, the length that we had been trying plus our age and my age, I mean, and you know, they think you're, you know, ancient when you're 35. So.
You're geriatric.
Yeah, exactly. Like what? So another label. So. And so, yeah, we got to rose to the top of that. We got our little lovely letter in the mail at that point in time that we're still getting letters. And we were pretty excited and stoked for that. And we had to drive down to Christchurch for our treatment. So, and any of our you know, appointments, and really found quite a great welcome and introduction to fertility treatment here in New Zealand through Fertility Associates here in Christchurch. Mm-hmm. And was very happy with the information that I was getting and sort of leading us through. It was a bit hard living a few hours drive away.
A bit.
But, you know, we again did what we needed to. And I think at one point we actually were able to meet with one of their staff in Nelson. So it was a quicker sort of drive, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we began that cycle, a new cycle of our second IVF cycle and first one here, and got, let's see what they called it, a baker's dozen.
13?
Yes. And I, you know, it was quite interesting how they named it because it's become quite a bit of the narrative around our story. It was quite cute, I think. Got 13 eggs, and out of those, 6 fertilized.
Right.
So there's that drop off, and then 4 ended up being viable.
Oh, that's such a better outcome, hey, than
the
first time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And it's so interesting to share that we were staying at friends here in Christchurch as we were, you know, for egg harvest, and then back again. They ended up finding a polyp, and so they decided to freeze the embryos, and I waited a whole nother cycle to have that sort of checked out.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it was gone. It was fine. And probably naturally just cleared out. But we were staying at a friend's house. And it was great just to have that familiar space after. It was quite a big deal. I mean, I'm kind of a sentimental person. And so just to be able to rest really after the egg harvest, because it's quite a huge thing for your body to.
It is.
Go
and emotionally too.
Yes.
Yeah, and how were you coping sort of mentally and emotionally through this time of doing treatment?
So for me, it was one key piece of this, I think, was the giving myself permission to rest when I needed to.
So good.
And I was able to be quite transparent with my employer. And I know not everyone's in that situation, but for me, that was a huge help, and I'm glad that was an easy conversation. And
that's wonderful.
Walks and journaling and just extra time with my husband, and Yeah. And for me, I mean, even art has been quite helpful, I think, for me going through this. So,
yeah.
Photography, watercolors.
Oh, amazing. So you got the four embryos that were all frozen. And then after that polyp cleared, did you go ahead with a transfer?
Yes. So about a month or so after, we came back down to Christchurch, and we're very happy to get that underway. And really great experience again with the transfer for me at the office here, and I actually felt quite cared for. It's just hard to explain. I almost felt otherworldly in a way, but yeah, again, I said I'm quite sentimental. So just the care that I received, they had one person that was in there. I think, well, there was, of course, the lab tech and then the doctor and a third person. Don't even recall their role, but she actually just put her hand on my belly. And I don't recall that happening any other transfers that I had. So I thought that was quite interesting that just that touch was like actually quite helpful.
Nice.
Yeah. And of course she said, can I put my hand on your belly?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, you may do that. Yeah, and so, yeah, so 2 weeks later or around that, and I didn't do the whole, let me do some pregnancy tests at home. I usually just waited for that finite moment. Or what felt like finite. But, yeah, and so, yeah, again, to kind of compliment the worst day of our lives, the few years prior, this was again the best news. Just, oh my goodness. But I remember that the feeling right before the phone call we were expecting, and just going, oh gosh, what are they going to say? And, I tried to stay quite positive throughout it all, but also give myself permission to, in those 2 weeks wait. It was just so hard.
It's like torture.
It is. And I mean, I could not think. It was very hard to concentrate on anything else. So just walking a whole bunch was really my escape, I think. And
And it was good news.
And it was a positive. It was just a wonderful, wonderful thing to have rest, on you, and just to say, wow. Just deep gratitude, for that, because I had never heard or seen a positive for us. And I know people have different journeys. Some people have seen lots of positives and still had not, had a child. And, but for us, you'd never even seen a positive. So it was really huge.
And, how amazing. Yeah, quite joyful. And that's your little Moana?
And that's our little Moana. Moana Joy is her full name.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful. Yes. Before we go on to you telling me a bit more, did you notice any big differences between receiving care and treatment in the US to here?
Well, it's interesting because even though we were on the public list here and went through that direction, I felt more cared for and sort of than with the cycle that we paid for in the States.
Right, in the private.
Just in regard to that, that's a bit shocking. And but, but the doctors that we had in both instances were great. I think it was just the wraparound care was a little bit more whole here.
I'm glad you got that kind of care. And would I be right in assuming there isn't a public paid for treatment in the United States?
That's right. Yeah.
So you have to be able to pay for it.
You do. Yeah. And depending on what kind of insurance you have, it could be significantly less. But
Okay. And so how did your pregnancy go with Moana?
It was wonderful. I loved pregnancy. I think for me, it was just, for a lot of reasons. One, we were finally pregnant and just trying to absorb and enjoy every single part of it. And I was fortunate not to have any sickness at all through
amazing
the pregnancy, and I felt quite healthy through it. Yeah, so it was a really good experience for me.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, just
loved
it, loved it.
Yay. And then what was it like to finally have that little girl in your arms?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, just amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah.
Just filled with, I mean, that's one reason her middle name is Joy. Just that small word for that huge feeling, and just whole, complete, sort of fulfilled promise. Like, because I felt like I was always told or sort of experienced and felt in my spirit that I would have a child, but just wasn't sure when. And so she actually, the interesting thing about her birth story, one of the interesting things is she just flew out. Like, she
really?
And the doctor, without knowing her name, said, "Oh, she came out like a wave."
Really?
So here was our, you know, Moana, our ocean joy. Just now, the labor up to that was longer and harder, but the actual pushing and everything just was very quick.
And had you already named her previous?
We had, the doctor had no clue. So we actually ended up telling her that later on the day. But so fun. So, just kind of that unreal feeling, again, sort of otherworldly feeling, like it's actually happening and she is ours and we are hers. And I mean, for me, our faith is quite strong for us.
Yeah.
And is a source of hope and strength and peace and comfort and a holding place for all of our emotions, no matter what they are. And so, like I said, it sort of felt like a fulfilled promise, because I had been sort of, in different ways shown that one day we would have a child. And I really believed that. And had no clue how that would come about, but it did.
And it did. Yeah. Amazing. And then you went on to try for another child. Tell me about that. So I presume you still had embryos in the freezer, right?
We did. We had our three embryos here in Christchurch. Now, I think I mentioned we had a 2-year work visa, or I had a 2-year work visa, and that was coming to a close. And we had to decide, once we became pregnant, what we were doing.
Right.
Because it was right toward the end of that all this was starting to happen. And so, because this was going to be the first, well, a few different reasons, but the first grandchild on my side of the family, we really felt, I really felt like I wanted to return home. To be close to my parents, to share that joy with them, which they, of course, had been, they had never been pressing or asking a lot, but very supportive from a distance and certainly sharing in the joy with us. So we returned to the States. I had just gotten my 7-week scan. And so it was that early on in the pregnancy.
Oh, that you moved back.
Yes.
Oh, so Moana was born in the US.
She was. Sorry.
Gotcha.
Missed that part. Time. And so we moved back, and my husband secured a job in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So we were in the north, what we call the north, as opposed to the south where I grew up. And so a different part of the country for us. But she was born there. She's a Pittsburgh Steeler, as they call them. And loves the snow, has loved snow since then for obvious reasons. I guess so much there. But we were there for a few years, a couple years there. And for, again, a number of reasons, we decided, and everything sort of changes. I mean, everyone says that, but I think it's true. When you become a family, whatever your family makeup is, more than yourself and your and your spouse or your partner, sometimes things shift and you think, well, what's the priority here and what do we want for our family? And we really felt New Zealand was the best option. Of course, I love home and I miss home and I miss my family, but it just was when we looked at raising children or this child that we knew we had, that seemed great. And there was a few other things happening, like in the States, politically, right. that we thought, maybe we have to get on to that. But yeah, there were quite a few other reasons.
And so you came back here.
Mm-hmm. And Moana was around 22. She wasn't even 2 years old at that point, but 22 months or so. And so we're coming up on 5 years having been back here. Which is hard to believe. And we got back and we were just really enjoying, you know, getting Moana and getting us sort of settled here. Mm. Of course, in the back of our mind, we were thinking about another embryo and when, and, but we weren't rushing into it either. Just really enjoying, you know, this wonderful almost 2 year old and so much going on in those years that, And so we chatted about it here and there, and obviously we were living at that point, you know, we had moved to Christchurch, which we're still here. And so we were thinking about, you know, I'd often drive past the fertility clinic and think, oh, my embryos are in there.
Hello, embryos.
Yes, it did feel a bit like that. And so we started inquiring around that whole process and what that, and it's so much, a bit easier, obviously, that you're not having to do the whole egg harvest and all that. And so quite a bit different in the timeline. And about 9 months, oddly enough, since we arrived back here, we decided to go for another embryo. Yeah. And that was also very easy and right away. You know, I kind of felt like I knew I was pregnant. You know, sometimes people say, I'm not sure if that was the right, you know, but it, you know, obviously it was. So, and we received that news. Yeah. While we were actually on holiday, and so exciting and so different.
Amazing.
It's wonderful to share with, you know, the news with our, at that time too, and a 1/2-year-old.
Yeah.
And to have that phone call, you know, with her there and to share that joy as a family. And yeah, and again, my pregnancy was also great. It was pretty straightforward. It was a little bit harder the second time around, just because a little bit older and a little bit everything else.
And running around after a toddler.
Exactly. Thank you. There is that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So, pregnancy went well. And I was glad here to have a midwife. In the States, if you want a midwife, you have to pay for one, or a doula, or however you decide to go. And we did not have that in the States. So for me, even that noticing of the difference was a big, big part. It was wonderful.
And so that was your Ruby?
That's our Ruby, Grace, Elizabeth.
Ruby, Grace, Elizabeth.
And all those names.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yes. And certainly, yeah, a grace to receive any gift. She was a gift, and each of them are. And so we're very thankful. My mom's middle name, Elizabeth, and so felt like, sort of a nod to that direction in the world. When we had Moana and named her Moana, it was sort of a nod to this direction in the world. And we had a bit of an excitement for her birth story as well, but she just sort of got her, what they thought was her shoulder. They thought that her shoulder was stuck, and it ended up actually being her hand or her fist, but that it was very hard to tell the difference. And it was getting, you know, to a critical spot. So doctors and nurses rushed in for a dramatic entrance into the world. But we, had similar feeling, you know, I think for her, just that overwhelming joy and gift that it is.
Yeah.
and that you, yeah, you're just trying to receive everything that's coming to you through this wonderful little bundle.
Amazing. So amazing. I love your children have such beautiful, meaningful names. Thanks for sharing that, those things with us. So lovely.
Absolutely.
I know when we were chatting, getting ready for the podcast, you shared with me around that what you've decided with your two remaining embryos. So can you share with me about that?
Absolutely. So, you know, after Ruby, you know, we just for us, it's sort of just taking each birth, each child, which we're not taking for granted, you know, just as it comes. And so, but for me, I think especially in the back of my mind and in my heart, in the corner of my heart, not forgotten, are those two that are sitting there.
Yeah.
Just wondering, you know, will we, you know, and, you know, because before we got married, we thought, oh, okay, well, you know, you share those early on in dating or in marriage, you know, or partnership, you're thinking about how many you might have one day and like it's going to be easy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's an assumed thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You can dictate. And we, you know, we'd always sort of thought, okay, two sounds like a great, you know, number for us. So I think, you know, starting out, it was like, okay, well, that, when once we had Ruby, which of course we didn't bank on having, we just thought it was a gift. It was like, okay, wow. You know, with them, the embryo still there, I was thinking about them a bit more, not to say that my husband wasn't, but yeah, I just wondered and I was trying to gauge how I was doing. I turned 40 a couple weeks after Ruby was born, not to say that's too old or at all. It's just, I did notice quite a difference for myself physically, and mentally as well, I will say. It was something we don't talk about much, and we should, I think, as sort of, at least for me, and quite a few other mothers I've chatted with over the last few years, the last few years has been difficult for me. And medically, most people don't actually acknowledge any postpartum anxiety or depression past a year. But there are actually studies in the States that say it can last up to 3 years. I mean, and they're not even putting a cap on it there, I don't think. But the more recent studies say it can be quite extended.
Yeah.
And so I think I just want to acknowledge that that's part of our journey as well, is that the mental aspect of trying again or use it, you know, getting another transfer, that was a piece of the equation for us.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Yeah. I remember the time that we drew the line in the sand with stopping treatment, and it, even though for me that was probably one of my darkest days, it was so the right decision for us because the relief from it was significant. So I totally hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, between having conversations, you know, picking them up, putting them down again as a couple, my husband was, he was 99.9% sure he didn't want to go down that route. I was the one kind of keeping the door a little bit more open, although it was my body and my sort of mental state that I was also really highly considering. I was still leaving the door open a bit to think maybe.
Yeah.
And so I needed to get to a place, or I asked for some more time, like, and ask sounds such a silly word, but my husband was, you know, pretty much made up his mind for how he felt, although he respected, I needed to get to a place. And so I needed time for that. And so I just said, hey, you know, I need some time and I'm not ready to make that choice. I'm not ready to make that decision. And so it was really, really good to actually do some more intentional counseling. So I kind of had different layers of counseling. I had just regular old counselor, and then I did some art therapy.
Nice.
And I have pictures from that art therapy that really helped me process some of this, what I was feeling. And I think the underlying question for me that I was carrying was, how can I treasure, you know, I treasure these embryos, like every single one of them is so special to me. So how can I treasure them if I'm not going to be using them?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the real key question that I was trying to process and get to a place where I could answer that and feel at peace about my answer.
Right.
And so I did. And again, I think it took around 9 months. It's funny how these cycles are just ingrained.
Yeah.
I came to a place, I think it was, we're actually coming up on the 1 year anniversary of us. Like, see, I remember all these dates so clearly. Mm-hmm. The 6th of March was our date that we acknowledged. Well, we actually had a ceremony for our embryos that I had collected from the fertility clinic here. Yeah. Once we made that decision. So it was kind of over the summer, last summer. And then by the time we got to March 6th, we were had already planned a little catechia and a ceremony involving our children as well, Ruby and Juana. And I just did a special ceremony here. And it took me that time. And I'm glad that, you know, I sort of said, hey, I'm glad I took that time, intentional time to process and work through that, because there wasn't necessarily a rush to decide. But I think for us, making that decision helps us to focus on the family that we do have.
Right. Absolutely.
And yeah, to enjoy that, because otherwise it's sort of just out there thinking, will I? Can I? Is there more?
I love what you did. I love that you took that time, made really intentional decisions, and then farewelled your embryos in a really beautiful way. It feels like a really complete journey for you and for them. It's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. It was very, I think there's still, as there always will be, right, a little bit of sadness.
Of course.
Around that, as I'm talking about it, I'm sort of tearing up.
Yeah,
Just acknowledging the journey and they will. They'll always be special.
Of course.
To us.
Yeah. What's something you think you learned about yourself going through this?
Gosh, it's okay to take the time, you know, that you need. I mean, sometimes we don't want to take the time because we want the answer and the end result to be there, the thing you're working toward, which is, this pregnancy, this child, to grieve well, I think, with whatever whatever that loss is, whether, and for me, kind of felt like the loss of time and obviously our first IVF cycle, that not having a pregnancy straight from that transfer. And so the loss of time, the loss of, and being able to grieve well as to practice gratitude. And so I think that balance, learning the importance of both of those things, I think is real, real key and something I've learned. I've learned that I'm stronger than I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, sometimes, you don't want to have to be strong in these ways, and it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to be misunderstood or completely not understood by people. And it's pretty key to find the people in your life that you can go to with the journey. And I think to find others who are on it is such a lifestyle.
I agree completely. Yeah. It's beautiful. And you may have already answered this in what you've just said about what you learned about yourself, but is there any further advice you would give to someone who's on a pathway like you?
I would say, keep going and have hope. And I believe in whatever way that it works itself out, hope does not disappoint. And so I think to have hope, to keep going and to find the support, reach out for support.
Yeah.
No matter what, and I know there's fertility support groups across the country.
Yeah.
That are ready to support people, and I'm helping facilitate one of those groups.
Are you?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Is it through Fertility New Zealand or something else?
It is.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yes. Amazing. I love that.
Yeah. It's wonderful to kind of give back. I think that's part of the journey for me too, is to actually get to the place where I went, oh, I was not a part of a support group myself.
Yeah.
Going through it, I found support in other ways through friends and individuals, but and counseling. But yeah, it's been wonderful to give back here.
Oh, I just love that so much. So is that an in-person, is that a meetup kind of situation?
We meet monthly, the last Tuesday of every month. Of course, right now we're not meeting in person, but typically we would be. And there's a handful of us that facilitate together and share that. And it's just wonderful to be involved and to help carry and walk alongside people.
That's so cool. Maybe I need to look into that too.
You would be amazing.
And our final question for you, Robin, is what does it mean to you to be Moana and Ruby's mama?
I think it is just the greatest joy, and being able to witness their joy and to participate and add to the joy that we share is delightful. And for me, it's an answer to prayer and that feeling of fulfillment. And watching their personalities unfold is my goodness, hilarious and wonderful. And I mean, both of our children make us laugh every day, but you know, Moana just, always makes us think and watch a little bit closer and deeper. And Ruby's always a bit silly. so it was just being able to witness, just this life together and to participate in life together, I think is the greatest gift it is to be a mom. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you. That's so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing this beautiful story with us. You've brought a really beautiful perspective, and I just know that someone listening will really resonate and will really help them. So I really appreciate you opening your heart to us.
Thank you for the opportunity. And it's just, such a joy to be able to share. And that's what we've got to keep doing. Sharing.
Yeah, we do. We do. Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Bye.
Ka kite.
Robin, thank you so much for so openly sharing your beautiful story. I am so glad you have Moana and Ruby in your arms. As always, I hope this podcast brings you hope, healing, and hugs.